You're listening to the For I Will Be With You podcast. For I Will Be With You. Daily reflections on recovery from the Bible.
Welcome back to the For I Will Be With You podcast for the 48th week of the year from November 25th to December 1st, covering Deuteronomy 15:7 to Deuteronomy 21:4. Deuteronomy 15:7 reads, "If there shall be a destitute person among you, any of your brethren in any of your cities, in the land that God, your God, gives you, you shall not harden your heart or close your hand against your destitute brother." So this, just to recap, is part of this long talk that Moses is giving to the Israelites on the last day of his life, which really forms the bulk of the book of Deuteronomy. And what Moses is relaying here is the word of God, and it's not really about charity per se. I mean, it is to some extent. It's mostly about the granting of interest-free loans. So in the Jewish community, there's a tradition of Jews granting interest-free loans to one another. This is comes from this biblical commandment. God is commanding the Israelites to be generous with the destitute among them. And the idea, this idea is really one of the main foundations of the Judeo-Christian charitable tradition. There's a reason why in the West, in European, American, and South American, places like that, where there's a Judeo-Christian culture, there's a tradition of charity. Of course, it's a very imperfect system, and it's not easy to follow this in practice, but there's at least the idea that you should be doing this, and that people, you should help people out if they're having trouble financially. At the same time, you know, this is not a commandment to let your guard down with people who are dishonest or trying to get over on you for money. And this is, you know, in recovery, this is a potential issue, because very often in recovery you meet people who are having a hard time financially. The question is, what should you do about it? And maybe the answer is absolutely nothing. But in some cases, you may want to help people out, or try and help them to help themselves, or give people your time and your energy. I know a guy in Los Angeles, it's interesting, he has a practice. He never lends money to people in the fellowship. He gives money. He says, "I'm going to give you $10. Just take it. Don't pay me back. I don't want it back. That way it'll never be hanging there between us." Of course, that's what he gives. He doesn't give them $1,000 or keep giving them money over and over again. He just gives them $10 if he thinks they need money, and that's it. But it's the same idea. The people in the program are our brothers and sisters. And as the verse says, do not harden your heart or close your hand against your destitute brother. And so we should follow this and open our hearts and hands to these new brothers and sisters we have in our lives. Deuteronomy 16:18 says, "Judges and officers shall you appoint in all your cities, which God, your God, gives you for your tribes, and they shall judge the people with righteous judgment." So God is articulating two concepts here that are connected. One of them is that the appointment of judges is... Sorry, let me say that again. The appointment of judges is part of a deal that goes with God giving the Israelites the cities, meaning you get the cities, you get the judges. Okay, the Israelites are not getting the cities in the promised land for any reason, any purpose that they want. They're being given to the Israelites so they can live holy lives and worship God and study the Bible and live righteously. And part of that requires having righteous judgment, good courts and judges who are free from corruption. And going a little further with this concept, the Israelites can only keep the land that God has given them if they maintain justice. and righteousness. And now for us, recovery is like our land. It's like our special place that's been given to us by God. And we can be holy in these places and turn our lives around. And we also have our own judges. And they are the experienced elders, the people with serious time and wisdom and sobriety, the people who keep the meetings going. There is a certain amount of judgment required to keep an AA meeting or program going as an institution. So we need to follow their lead and respect their judgments, listen to them, even if we don't understand or agree. I mean, there are ways to respectfully disagree and discuss things that are on your mind or whatever, but it's important in recovery to respect that someone who has more time than you or someone who's really committed themselves to running a meeting, whatever, has maybe more understanding of what's going on than you do. Chances are that a seasoned veteran of recovery is a person who has great conscious contact with God, and you should respect that. Deuteronomy 16:19 continues with an instruction to the judges themselves. So speaking to the judges, God says through Moses, he says in 16:19, "You shall not pervert judgment, you shall not respect someone's presence, and you shall not accept a bribe, for the bribe will blind the eyes of the wise and make just words crooked." So this is a warning to the judges. They're warned against respecting the presence of a wealthy or important person. So, you know, ideally in a court of law, it's the facts that matter, not the personalities, right? Now, of course, we know sometimes this isn't true, but really a judge is supposed to really weigh the facts, not because someone's rich or someone's famous, or even in certain cases, but if someone's poor, they may get no favoritism allowed because of who you are. It's about the facts. And, you know, it's interesting, in Los Angeles at least, and maybe other places, you see famous people in AA meetings. I mean, really, really famous people. Academy Award-winning actors, major athletes, and on, singer, musicians, people who you are on billboards. And it's easy to be impressed or excited that someone like that is in a meeting. But, you know, you really shouldn't be, because they're at the meeting because they need help, and they need you to be an honest friend, not a fan. You're not doing them any favors in recovery by treating them any differently than you would any other recovering addict. And in fact, it may be because of all this adoration and enabling that they've experienced it, that's why they're in the meeting. They've been allowed to indulge in behaviors that are self-destructive. Now, this may seem... Okay, so in a similar way, this has to do with the judge not taking a bribe. A judge shouldn't be swayed by a famous person in his court. We shouldn't be swayed by a famous person in a meeting. Shouldn't be bribed by that, so to speak. Now, of course, it may seem obvious that a judge should not accept a bribe. That's very basic. But what the verse is hinting at is the bribe may be something a little more subtle and complicated to understand. We might be bribing ourselves, meaning we might pervert our own judgment to get what we want, and looking for, you know, little legal loopholes and ways we can pay ourselves off to do what we want, as if we're corrupting our own judge of ourself. And we need to fight this corruption and guide ourselves towards a sense of inner justice that will keep us on the right path. We generally know what's right and wrong for us, and what's right or wrong in general. And when we slip into doing something that we know truly is wrong, we've bribed ourselves. We've paid ourselves off with some excuse or, you know, rationalization that allows us to become as if we were in a corrupt courtroom, pleading a dishonest case with ourselves. Deuteronomy 16:20 is a very famous line from the Bible. It says, "Righteousness, righteousness shall you pursue, so that you will possess the land that God, your God, gives you." Now, in some contexts, especially in the world of Jewish community and political outreach, this verse is shortened simply to justice, justice shall you pursue, which has been an inspiration for people who seek truth and justice in the world, trying to right the wrongs of the world. And, you know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that concept, but it's a little bit off from what most scholars think this verse actually means. Because, for one thing, the advice, righteousness, righteousness shall you pursue, is not being given to everybody. It's being given to the judges. And so the judges are being told that they must pursue righteousness, pursue the rightness, the righteousness in any litigation they are hearing. The judge must be balanced and impartial, not allowing himself to be swayed by important people or facts not in evidence. And the admonition can also be understood as advice to the litigants themselves. A person seeking justice needs to find a respected judge, present the case, and obey the verdict. And as we may have experienced in our lives, this can be really hard to do. Everybody, when you have your beef with somebody or something, you are really right about it, right? You're right and they're wrong, and nobody is going to tell you that you're not right. But if you're following this verse and you're following the principles of the Bible in recovery, if you submit your beef to a good judge and the judge tells you you're wrong, you need to obey that opinion, as difficult as it might seem. And this comes up in recovery, sometimes in small ways. But this comes up, like, for example, in the 10th step. You know, when you're wrong, admit it. Boy, that can be hard sometimes, right? And we often, in when we're acting out in addiction or even in recovery, we seek out sort of corrupt judges of our behavior, people we know we can corrupt, sort of like the friend who gets us, you know, and enables us, you know, who doesn't think it's such a big deal to drink a little bit, you know. And we find that sort of judge for our trial, so to speak. And, you know, it doesn't help us. Getting a corrupt judge to weigh in on our personal lives will end up with an unjust solution for ourselves. If we want to get sober and stay sober, we need to find a judge who will tell us like it is, even if we don't want to hear the truth about who we really are. That is righteousness. Deuteronomy 16:21 says, "You shall not plant for yourselves an idolatrous tree, any tree near the altar of God, your God, that you shall make for yourself." So what the Bible is referring to is in biblical times, idol worshippers often planted and worshipped trees. That was one of their gods. We think of like a gardening or decorating the front yard, but in this case, they're talking about planting a tree that is used for the purpose of idol worship. And the commentators note that it's not an accident that this comes right after the series of verses that talk about the judges and the courts. You know, juxtaposition of verses, one thing following another, is often very significant in the Bible, and you can learn from it. This advice not to plant a tree for idol worship near the altar of God comes right after the discussion of judges, because God wants us to relate the two concepts together, meaning that one way to interpret it is that a corrupt judge is like a toxic tree that can take root and ruin the holiness of God's altar. And in addiction, the way this can come up, this idea, is that we compartmentalize. We have our spiritual health in the meeting, but maybe we behave badly when we're out of the meeting, okay? This eventually catches up with us, like a tree that grows roots and becomes stronger over time. The bad behavior outside the meeting will ultimately become extremely difficult to remove. We have to guard against poisoning our spiritual well-being. You know, when we're in a meeting, we should focus on keeping harmful outside influences at bay. And when we leave that spiritual realm, we need to keep that holiness with us as we move around on the outside. Now, this is not always easy. It's easier to be holy when you're in a quiet place full of people who have a similar goal on their minds, but it's possible to carry that with you when you go outside, or to some extent, and the more you work on it, the better you get at it, usually. Deuteronomy 17:17 gets onto a new topic, which is the the king of Israel. And what's interesting is there was actually no king of Israel for quite a while after the Torah was given. It was, I think, several hundred years at least between the Exodus from Egypt and the giving of the Torah and the anointing of the first king of Israel. So the Bible is talking about a future state, but the Bible is, God is laying out the rules for the king of Israel. The king of Israel cannot be like any other king. It says, Deuteronomy 17:17 says, "And he," meaning the king of Israel, "and he shall not have too many wives, so that his heart not turn astray, and he shall not greatly increase silver and gold for himself." So, you know, in biblical times, and, you know, in modern times too, to some extent, the king, the ruler, was someone who was allowed to enrich himself at everyone else's expense and amass, you know, fortunes and, you know, and in the old days have many, many wives, in some cases even hundreds of wives. But the king of Israel is not supposed to be like this. The king of Israel, according to the Bible, according to God's commandment, is not supposed to have an excess number of wives or a lot of silver and gold. The king of Israel is supposed to be partly a secular ruler, but also a moral and spiritual role model for the Israelites. And it's interesting, there is a little detail that the king of Israel was supposed to carry an actual Torah scroll with him at all times. So imagine the king of Israel with his crown, his horses, carrying a Torah with him. Probably a little one, not like the big ones they have in the synagogue today, but a little one to remind him that he is the king because of the Torah, not because he's so great. He should have some humility. And this was even a criticism that was leveled at King Solomon, who was considered the wisest of men, but he did not follow this advice particularly well. He had hundreds of wives. It caused him trouble. And for us, what does this mean to us? Are any of us a king? Maybe. There might be a king in a meeting somewhere in the world. But we are the king of ourselves. Okay, we are our rulers of our own self. And this advice applies to us. We should not indulge ourselves in excess. Excessive romantic relationships. Excessive money hoarding. These things are distracting. They might be intriguing and fun in the moment, but they're ultimately bad for recovery. Deuteronomy 18:10 says, "There shall not be found among you one who causes his son or daughter to pass through the fire, one who practices divinations, an astrologer, and one who reads omens, a sorcerer." Now, this may seem like pretty obvious advice. Don't throw your children into a fire because a pagan priest tells you to. But this was, at the time, there were child sacrifices in certain idolatrous religions where somebody, I don't know the details, but I do know this was true. It's been sort of borne out historically and archaeologically that certain religions had children sacrificed periodically to appease their gods. Now, some commentators say that the actual practice that they're talking about here was involved carrying a child through a flame, rather, sort of for a minute, and then not burning them up. But, you know, it's funny. Now, this may seem very odd, but if you actually don't have to look very far to find this kind of thing today, like in the self-help movement, you know, you can find people who will teach you to walk on fiery coals as a way to achieve quote-unquote personal empowerment. You know, and this, I think, relates to the verse, meaning that if we worship our own idol of selfhood, which is really kind of like our modern idolatry, like worshiping of the self, walking on coals to prove that we are powerful in ourselves, we may be adopting a life that strays far away from the principles of recovery, because when you worship yourself, you're crowding out your ability to worship God and follow God's will. And, you know, when the 12th step says, practice these principles in all our affairs, you know, it's including the way we treat ourselves and our family relationships. We shouldn't put our children through the fire. We shouldn't put ourselves through the fire. We shouldn't read omens and practice sorcery. You know, as we say, today is God's business. Today is today's for us. You know, tomorrow is God's business. You shouldn't be involved in divining the future. Just live correctly today. Finally, Deuteronomy 21:1 to 21:4 presents an important biblical story. It's a little bit of a long verse. It's actually three verses. So let me share it with you. It goes, "If a corpse will be found on the land that God, your God, gives you to possess, fallen in a field, it was not known who smote him. Your elders and judges shall go out and measure toward the cities that are around the corpse. It shall be that the city nearest the corpse, the elders of that city shall take a heifer, with which no work has been done, which has not pulled with a yoke. The elders of that city shall bring the heifer down to a harsh valley, where it cannot be worked and cannot be sown, and they shall axe the back of its neck in the valley." So what they're saying here is that if a dead body is found between two cities, the city that's closest to the dead body, the elders of that city must make a special sacrifice to God. Why? They need to atone for the sin of neglecting this person. Meaning that God is saying, you should be punished. You need to atone for the sin of not caring for this person who could wander off and die without anybody knowing who they are or where they came from. And this is very different from today, where, you know, politicians and the police sometimes treat poor and homeless people like non-persons, or if someone's found dead in the middle of nowhere, it's the most forgettable non-event, right? The Torah says we have to take responsibility for the least among us. If a poor, unknown person is murdered and the murderer is not known, shame on us. You know, we should have noticed. We should have cared. And, you know, if you've hung around AA meetings, you'll know. You'll meet people who you think, you know, this person could disappear and nobody would know. I mean, certainly there are people like that in recovery. You know, people who really need help and unfortunately are all alone. And who could die and no one would know? Or if they were found dead, no one would know where they came from or who they were. And this verse can maybe inspire us to extend ourselves to people like this. Now, of course, we have to do it in a reasonable way. We can't, not everybody is cut out to be Mother Teresa. But a smile, a ride, a drop off at a social service center, a handshake, a cup of coffee can make a big difference to people who feel as if they don't count.
You've been listening to the For I Will Be With You podcast. Daily reflections on recovery from the Bible. www.foriwillbewithyou.com